Good afternoon. I'm Jordan Peoples, and Marvel sucks.
I'm Cade Weiberg, and no, it doesn't. Case in point, we are talking about one of the greatest comic book movies pre-MCU, arguably the greatest, but we have a very special guest back to...
Wait, this movie is arguably the greatest?
I think before Iron Man, I think this is the greatest comic book film.
Interesting.
Oh boy. We might be
arguing. Not saying I'm going to come out here negative. I just, the high watermark, I didn't know
this,
that's where we were at.
I have a very special history with this movie. But also, let me introduce our guest. We are joined by the man you will remember defending Godzilla Minus One as if it needed any help on our Christmas episode. He's back, Mr. Nicholas Bradshaw, X-Men enthusiast himself.
Hello.
More of a DC enthusiast, but he came to talk about X-Men in a pinch when we needed him.
You know, there's not... We don't have a lot going on right now, so this is the off-season.
It is the off-season.
I wish I'd watched Godzilla Minus One in the interim time. That would have been a great full circle.
You've had 4 months, so there's really no excuse.
It's coming
and
to
it
home
also,
video.
This is not the first time I've thought about it. I've thought several times to circle back to it, and I have not yet done it.
Well, yeah, I guess so. It's streaming in
Early May.
Okay. So it'll be
available for people soon.
You would have had to buy it before now, which, you know.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It's
unlikely.
You don't want to burn the bank down too much. You just got your lawyer job. You got to start saving.
Yeah. Exactly.
So we are here to talk about X2. This is, in my opinion, better than any of the Raimi Spider-Mans. I know that's a hot take, but I think this does everything that X1 tries to do with introducing everyone and all that, and it really just excels at being a great comic book movie and balancing a ton of characters and having some of the most iconic moments in any of these movies. It's probably, I think, my third or fourth favorite X-Men movie. It's definitely behind Logan and Days of Future Past.
I guess the X-Men movies that come after,
yes,
you're saying, are better than this one. This
correct.
Is the best X-Men movie. It's just the best one that happens pre-Iron Man.
Correct.
How many happen pre-Iron Man?
If
it's two, that's not much of a statement.
Well, we got all the Raimi Spider-Men. We have a Ben Affleck Daredevil.
At least two Blades.
Three Blades.
All three Blades
came out before. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Or, no, before Iron Man.
Oh, for Iron Man. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's a lot more of a list.
Yeah. A Ghost Rider.
Ang Lee Hulk.
Yep.
Maybe Ghost Rider 2? No, that's...
Ghost Rider 2's after. Yeah. But, I mean, that's, you know, a bad one.
Wow. Superhero movies really used to be different. Because just, like, listening to that list...
Yeah. And they didn't really have... And it's funny seeing, like, Kevin Feige's name is on all of these. But he started as, like, an intern or whatever getting coffee during... all of the, like, Spider-Man and everything. He just kind of worked his way up by being
both
super...
Fantastic Fours, too.
Oh, yes. Both Tim Story, Fantastic Fours.
So, like, in terms of your MCU lore, I mean, this is just a different corner of all their profitable characters that they were actually selling before the MCU, like, resuscitated their less popular characters. Like,
yeah.
Iron Man being a B-level character.
Oh, yeah.
2008.
It's so weird that like, original lineup of Avengers was just left untouched.
Because it wasn't profitable. Like,
no.
The reason they could make it is that nobody wanted them otherwise.
But it's so... Just thinking, like, if Sony... Like, during that auction... So, in the 90s, we've mentioned this on the podcast. They had that auction where Marvel Studios was going bankrupt and they sold all their characters for movie rights. Sony bought Spider-Man and then had an offer... They're like, if you pay us a little more, like, you know, a few million dollars, we'll give you all the characters. And they're like, we just want Spider-Man. And boy, did that kind of backfire on them.
Boy, do they just have Spider-Man.
Well, I mean, they are releasing Madame Web, and they are, to do anything with Spider-Man, they're now kind of under Disney's thumb.
They were right in the sense that Spider-Man, even after the Avengers, is still the single biggest... And partially because he's been incorporated now.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I don't know, in terms of
if
what I see on children's t-shirts and stuff, Spider-Man is still
is
way overrepresented compared to any other hero.
Merchandise, sure, but think about, like, so Sony's doing MCU stuff and, or sorry, Disney's doing MCU stuff and Sony, in response to that, is doing Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies. Like, imagine if we didn't get Tom Holland in here. Would Spider-Man even still be like a relevant character that people would look up to? What do you think? How vast or how big is the drop of Spider-Man's popularity if he's not part of the MCU?
I don't think it'll ever drop. I think it'll still be maybe right under Superman in terms of iconography. You know,
Think Superman's above Batman?
As far as iconography and like indelible symbols, yeah, for sure.
Interesting.
Like, that's the thing I was thinking about with this movie is how different it is from the comics X2, at least, right? Mm-hmm. And how it didn't stop the comics from going a certain direction eventually just because it's different, right? So, like, I really don't know that Spider-Man ever would lose the focus. Like, maybe the Raimi ones are more of a hit or miss. Like, if you don't have the Raimi Spider-Man movies, maybe it gets, like, relegated and has some dark days, but yeah. No, I don't think it's hurting it. In fact, I think people are still going to Spider-Man comics because of how lame some of the showings are. Because
he's mistreated in the movies.
Yeah.
Jordan, what do you think?
I'd be curious to know, merchandise-wise, I assume the top three are Superman, Batman, and Spider-Man. I don't know what order those three fall in. Like, in terms of just toy sales.
Yeah.
I think most of the time Spider-Man's at the top of that, to be honest with you. Probably get Spider-Man, Batman, Superman in that order.
I'm surprised to hear that Superman is that high on the list. I know Spider-Man and Batman are like the two everybody knows. And I guess Superman is just, everyone knows. Do people know what kryptonite is? Like, people know Superman, sure. But how much of the...
None of Spider-Man's stuff has hit like the cultural lexicon the way that kryptonite has. You know, I mean, do you
I guess it is much
song?
Older.
Yeah,
I feel like you get
three doors down. Like
sorry.
Someone would say something's a person's kryptonite, just colloquially, to mean their Achilles heel.
Do they not say that with, like, Spider-Man's weakness?
Poverty?
Yeah. This is a real bullet to Uncle Ben.
Boo.
I would love a good Superman movie. I hope DC makes that happen.
James Gunn is in charge, so odds are it's gonna happen.
Because I do feel like Superman has just... is famous as he ever has been, but just has not had a good moment in the spotlight.
Yeah. He,
in terms of movies.
Much like Fantastic Four. I guess, you know, the Zack Snyder ones have been popular amongst some groups on the internet.
Weirdly enough, I think Superman is one of those roles that elevate whatever actor is playing them, whereas I think Spider-Man and Batman, it's like, obviously, Tom Holland and Andrew Garfield, and Tobey Maguire are all great actors, but I don't think that they necessarily had like a key shift after playing them where they got more successful, with maybe Andrew Garfield being the exception. Like, Tom Holland's obviously working, but with Superman, it's like Christopher Reeve, icon. People still love Brandon Routh, you know.
What has he been in?
But Henry Cavill, I don't really feel like Superman was the breakout role for Henry Cavill, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and
I mean, that's certainly where I had learned his name.
Yeah.
And if, you know, 2025 Superman is going to be that for, gosh, I forget his
Corn name. Sweat.
Yeah, David Cornsweat. Then I think is one of those things where the character is just kind of right for it, in the way that James Bond is, almost. Where it's like, there's something so iconic about it that whoever gets it,
they're kind of gets just worshipped no matter what.
I think so.
Unless they do. Yeah. What has that ever backfired on anyone, where they go in expecting... and they're just, like, totally destroyed by the internet? So, someone like Ben Affleck, but even Ben Affleck had fans.
Not to Superman.
To a superhero.
I feel like Ben Affleck is the best example of that. Okay. You know what I mean? Where he gets memed really hard after that, and it's not at all what he wants. It's not the comeback he wants for it. He's had to kind of move laterally from it. Like, with this movie as an example, it's like, I don't really want to overlook something like Wolverine, where Hugh Jackman, you know, is like encapsulating the character and does it so well here that he comes back and does it more and more times.
Yeah.
You know,
I would also like to point out, since this is our episode 2 of our X-Men franchise, leading up to Deadpool, and also timing with the release of X-Men 97, which I said we wouldn't talk about or watch because it's not technically MCU canon, but I've been watching it and it is truly stellar. It's like an anime more than like a kids show. I was expecting like a reboot of a Saturday morning cartoon, which is what, like, it's the original cartoon is for young audiences.
That's my understanding of it too.
And I've watched, like, the first five episodes from 1992, and I was like, this is for children, I can't really get into this. And I don't have much nostalgia for that specific cartoon. And then I just watched on a whim, like, everyone was raving about it, and the show is truly spectacular. Really
How many episodes are in it?
It's going to be 10, they're doing weekly.
Okay.
But I would recommend watching it, and then if you enjoy it, we can do an episode leading up to Deadpool. Because the writing are you caught up, Nick?
Through five, not through six.
Five is, like, so far the
peak. Five was amazing.
Yeah, five is maybe one of the best animated 30 minutes I have ever watched.
And we've watched Last Evolution Kazuna.
That's true.
Digimon fans, rise up.
They're out there. There are dozens of us. So, yes, I highly recommend X-Men 97. It has a 9.0 on IMDb, which I think is the highest rated Marvel show, like right above WandaVision.
It's changed. The Disney Plus banner has changed away from
Watcher
to...
Yeah, it's X-Men 97. Yeah. Like so many. And Cyclops is like on the Disney Plus.
Did you catch the Watcher thing in episode 5?
No.
Well, he's like, his silhouette is in the sky watching the events of episode 5. So I wouldn't be surprised
if you
got an X-Men 97 pulled into a what if in the future. So
They have mentioned they're doing that.
Oh,
that
cool.
X-Men will be in season 3.
I'm not surprised.
That's hot. Good content. Highly recommend X-Men 97 for those listening and for Jordan. The person I always try to get watch content to watch.
We'll see. That was a good good pitch on it. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested now than I was 2 minutes ago.
It does. I don't want to compare it to something like Game of Thrones, but it really does. Like the moments in episode 5 and episode 2, I really loved as well.
Well, like besides the animation quality, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, it's very well drawn, like, and looks beautiful.
It's hard to say something like that other than like when you know you have kind of like a limited series and they put really the time into it, and like it does feel like the quality of some of the best anime. I've never watched all of Attack on Titan, but I'm working through it now and I keep getting like stunned by like this is very different than even like TV from my childhood or cartoons from my childhood, like the Justice League cartoon, which I love, but it's like they didn't get as much budget for it as this, and X-Men 97 clearly has that. But I also think it leans into some of the parts of the X-Men universe that people don't know that they love because they're very backseated in the movies, including this one.
Cyclops specifically. I have a huge tangent to talk about Cyclops in this movie because as soon as Wolverine's popularity in this franchise just took off, Bryan Singer completely cucked Cyclops. Like, he is supposed to be the leader of the X-Men and, like, the guy.
Yeah.
But now he is just, like, you know, barely in this movie and a wimp whenever he needs to impress the X-Men.
Yeah. You know, in the last one we talked about, like, he did end up getting a moment.
Yeah.
And I don't think he gets a moment.
He does not. It is taken from him in a
for sure.
In a very brutal way. But in the show, he is front and center, and Wolverine is kind of, like, a bit more cucked. He's still cool.
Okay, I don't know that we need to have a, you know, requisite cuck in the X-Men.
I don't know.
It happens more often than you think.
It's so interesting
to talk about,
because there is a scene where he like approaches Jean Grey in the cartoon.
Yeah,
and it's like replicates. Oh, I totally forgot about this scene in the movie where Logan like has the kiss with Jean Grey, and it's like it's charged, and it's like, well, they could end up together. In the comic, it's like, he looks like a little goblin kind of making out with a princess, and he's like, I know I'm not better than Cyclops, and walks away.
I'll spoil it as a tease for anybody out there listening, where it's, if you're not watching X-Men 97 and listening to the podcast, do yourself a favor, do both, but like,
definitely watch X-Men 97.
You know, Jean's in a moment of weakness and Wolverine, her have kiss, and Wolverine's like, you just got confused for a second, you know, you should be with your man. And I'm just like, and I turned to Kaylee, I was like, man, he is so in love with her that he will not let her fall in love with him. That's real simp behavior.
It is the opposite of this movie. Although Wolverine, you know, in fight sequences, still pretty badass. Perhaps we should talk about this film, unless there's other... Have you watched any other movies, Jordan?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Not since the last time we talked.
Well, that was about 6 weeks ago at this point, I think. We're a little behind. We should finish all of our planned content before Deadpool is released 3 months from now. We only need to talk about three more movies after today. So I hope we can do one a month at least, and then maybe fit in X-Men 97. Get Nick back for the Wolverine. Should Jordan be enjoying these films?
Okay, I have a place to start with this movie.
How about even the before beginning? Because it rules.
No, before that. I want to talk about this poster that's on Wikipedia.
Okay. I have it.
It's kind of a weird selection of characters, I feel like. There's no.
It is weird.
Professor X.
Well, yes, sure. Because he's also kind of nerfed in this movie.
No,
so the
Cyclops,
poster is
a
photo of a steel X, and in the hollowed out letter X, you have Storm's face in top left, you have Hugh Jackman, or Wolverine, on the right, and then you have Pyro, Nightcrawler, Iceman on one side, and Rogue, Magneto, and Jean Grey?
Yep.
Okay. You see a lot of Mystique as, like, her
Yeah, Mystique
actress
should be
form.
On this.
She's not on it either. It's weird Nightcrawler gets a spot over Mystique.
No villain on the poster? Not
well,
really.
Magneto's kind of a villain.
No, not the cool villain.
How do we
also,
feel?
Storm's really cool, but
not
and she does
the
a lot of things.
Yeah.
But well, I feel like she doesn't have like much character time in the
I
movie.
Have trivia about that.
Okay, great.
Because I brought some trivia for this.
This will be a
oh boy.
Moment one of Nick's trivia corner.
All right.
segment that will recur.
I don't know if I screenshotted all of it. But basically, Halle Berry was much bigger by this movie after the first one. Had a lot more
Catwoman.
Yes, of course. the watermark of all cinema. But she actually got to, you know, write some things for the movie, or at least pressure them on their writing, which is why her conversations with Nightcrawler are in the movie. And while that scene of her taking down the jets with the tornadoes is in the movie. Those are recommendations from her. So she's a much bigger star at this point, which makes sense that she's big on the poster.
Because always, especially after the first one as well, you think like Storm's power is so massive and can't be confined to the interior of a building.
Right.
So I really thought like the studio was like, let's show off, like let's get some CGI and do like a proper Storm thing
for sure.
in the sky. That's cool that she.
But that's like her pressure, and I think she's been a fighter for that character in every time she's appeared. You know.
Well, I don't think anyone fought that hard for their character in X-Men Last Stand. But
she
we'll
at least
talk
got
about
to drop the
time.
Accent from the first movie, which is not explained and doesn't need to be, thank goodness.
That kind of happens in a lot of these. Wanda Maximoff is our most guilty culprit of that problem.
You were from a different country, that's right?
Yeah.
Is that true?
I do love how they pointed out in WandaVision, they're like, oh, that accent just comes and goes, doesn't it? Pretty clever. So, this movie, I gotta say, my background with it, I will just talk about the first time I ever watched it, as I'm known to do on this podcast, when I don't watch them with Jordan for the first time. I was in 7th grade. I had watched the first X-Men movie, like, a month prior, and I was hooked. I was so invested in these characters. And it was Friday night. I had waited all week to watch this. Like, the DVD came in the mail early in the week. I set it up, put it in the DVD player. I watch the White House sequence with Nightcrawler. And I'm like, this is the greatest movie ever made. And then my father comes upstairs. He's like, you've watched enough TV today. Even though I hadn't, I feel like this was my first, or all week, I don't know, whatever. He says, it's my turn to watch a movie, and he puts in Harold and Maude.
So much great worse movie. To watch with anybody.
And I watched it, and Jordan is probably like, just like, with childish glee, like, oh, that would be such a fun Friday night for me as a 13-year-old.
Cat Stevens did the soundtrack.
He sure did. And I am watching that movie, and I fucking hate it. And I will never, never like it as a result. Just, I think it's a bad movie, because it prevented me from watching X2. Also, just, it's weird.
Why didn't you tell your dad that Nightcrawler's a Christian? He really would have.
I know, he would have liked the whole Catholic angle.
Yeah,
I'm like, this is like church.
Yeah, it's like, Dad, I'm doing the Bible study.
I feel more connected to Nightcrawler than Jesus.
And that's why he took it from me.
He did. So we watched all of Harold and Maude. I was, as a child, really grossed out that this 80-year-old woman was courting this, you know, boy my age. And I was like, I'm not interested in that at all. And then I tried to watch it after. Him and my mother finished Harold and Maude. I left the movie halfway through. I assume it ends as bad as it started. And then I come back, and my dad's like, you have to go to bed now. It's like, it's only 10 p.m. This is so heartless and cruel. And then I watched it the next night, and boy, did it live up to the anticipation of being a perfect... This was probably my favorite movie when I was 13. Like, this was the best movie experience.
Choice.
Nightcrawler was so cool. All right, well, I don't want to skip ahead, but the sequence where the home invasion. Yeah. Yes, the military goes into the school and Wolverine fights them all is probably the first time I've ever jumped out of my seat at a movie out of excitement. Mm-hmm. But we can go beat by beat now. Jordan, you had never seen this film.
No, and I was sitting here trying to think what my favorite movie was when I was 13.
Probably Harold and Maude, you freak.
That was the joke I was going to make. But then I was really trying to think on it.
It probably genuinely is like The Graduate. Or Days of Heaven.
Yeah, I have no idea what it would have been. So we got to move forward with a bit. I wish there was some closure to it. I have no idea.
Oh, you must keep a diary or something. See, this is why you need to update your Letterboxd.
Yeah.
This would help.
Everybody out there, pause this podcast.
Yeah. Update your follow Letterboxd. Marv L. Sucks on Letterboxd. If he gets a little more followers, he might be inclined to post more often.
Well, I don't watch any movies, so I have...
Yet to add X-Men 1, I believe. You did not add that last time. So.
Okay, well, other than the X-Men movies over the course of the next 3 months, I don't know if I'll be adding anything else.
I mean, you just mentioned... So on our last episode, we discussed that you, now that you're, you know, a full-time lawyer, you want to spend your nights at home with your brain turned off kind of deal, because you think a lot during the day. So you could log some Jackass movies. You could log Bad Grandpa. Really anything with Johnny Knoxville.
Like that one movie he did where he was in the Special Olympics.
Yes, The Ringer.
Yeah.
You should watch The Ringer.
It feels like a good time to watch The Ringer. 2024.
Yeah. You've waited long enough.
Probably holds up. Treat yourself. All right, let's talk about X2. You didn't have a favorite movie when this came out in theaters. You or your friends were not watching it. No one forced you to watch this. You were forced at a young age, as we have mentioned on this podcast, to watch Phantom Menace and The Dark Knight.
I mean, 2008, that wasn't...
Yeah, you
quite
were...
Quite a bit after this.
Oh, well, 5 years.
So yeah, you're, that's a long time when you're a kid.
I guess that is a quarter of your life.
Yeah.
But still, you reluctantly watched The Dark Knight and ended up liking it, if I recall.
Well, it was pretty good, except for the fact that I was sitting in
an uncomfortable
chair.
I remember.
Yeah. which will never not be associated with my memory of that movie. Terribly uncomfortable wooden chair.
Rack.
Yeah. There's just no other spot seats in this house.
I think there were, because so many people wanted to see it. Like his whole family, I was watching at a friend's house, and the rest of his family took all the comfortable chairs, and then they're like, oh, Jordan's here. Let's pull up a crappy chair from the dining room. It's a 2.5-hour movie.
It is long. It's a long time to sit in an uncomfortable chair, but you did like it.
Yeah, it was pretty
good. You have watched Marvel movies in more comfortable settings that you've hated.
That's true.
So
I was more physically comfortable, less mentally comfortable. All right, so we got to talk about this movie.
Let's talk about this movie. It's really good.
We keep dancing around it.
I'm going to just drop my review at the top. 4.5 stars. It is... Let me pull up my X-Men list.
Wait, out of 6?
No, didn't we rate the last one? Are we doing out of 6?
Are you just rating things out of 6?
We do for the Avengers... Yeah, great question. We do for all the MCU movies rate them out of 6, but for... Is it just we don't put Avengers at the table?
Maybe we should rate out of 5 if that's what we did last time.
I don't
do
remember
the Spider-Man movies. The Raimi ones.
I think we did out of 5.
Okay.
Why don't we do both 5 and 6? just to keep up. But we don't need to put Avengers at the table.
The problem with rating out of 6 is it gives you very unclean percentages.
Which is why we did it and we've committed to this bit for 120-ish episodes.
It's time to go.
Like 5/6 is like 83% or something.
For the people at home, I gave this movie 4.5 stars. X2 is my third favorite X-Men movie, followed by Deadpool and Deadpool 2. And then Logan and Days of Future Past are 1 and 2. They kind of go back and forth depending on what I'm in the mood for, because Logan, I think, is a better movie. But Days of Future Past is just a really good X-Men finale swan song, even though they continue to unfortunately make X-Men movies after it.
The Furious 7 of the X-Men.
Oh, jeez, it really is. Anyway, so this movie starts off with a White House sequence. And Nightcrawler, who we have not seen in the previous movie, has been brainwashed to kill the president. And he's just zip-zopping around, teleporting, and kicking all of these agents' asses. And it is pretty badass. Jordan, what did you think of this sequence?
I also thought it was pretty badass. It's a very fun sequence. Very cool power.
Yeah. Nightcrawler was probably my favorite at a time.
Yeah.
I would think.
I found it strange that it was Alan Cumming.
Yeah.
Fluent in German.
He just does not seem like the kind of guy that's in superhero movies to me. But I guess he was in a lot of stuff that's kind of like that. Like Spy Kids.
Yeah. He likes to have fun, Jordan.
Yeah, I was just looking at his Wikipedia now.
I think he's great in this. It is a shame that they do not bring him back for the third movie inexplicably.
That's because of Bryan Singer.
What, did he not like?
How much do you guys know about the production on X2?
None.
Yeah, why don't fill us in, please?
Bryan Singer was high a lot during the production of X2. To the point where on drugs, and he had like shouting matches with some other producers about it. But Hugh Jackman actually got hurt on the set of X2 and hurt his back because Bryan Singer insisted on doing a stunt on a day that the stunt coordinators were not present, and that led to Hugh Jackman hurting his back. This all ultimately culminated in like a kind of a pseudo intervention where a lot of the X-Men actors went to Bryan Singer, and I think Alan Cumming tells the story where Halle Berry was saying like, "Yeah, I've had a lot of friends who have like been in your situation, and that you know they can." If they don't get help, it leads to something worse or something like that. Yeah. And he, like, cursed him out, which is reportedly where Halle Berry said, "Kiss my black ass," and walked away, right? Which is, like, a famous behind-the-scenes story there. Noted, Bryan Singer does not come back for Last Stand, probably because all the actors who had clout did not want to work with him again. Alan Cumming specifically said he didn't come back because of his bad experience on X2.
Huh. But that's fascinating that he does return for Days of Future Past.
Right.
And not only makes, like, the best X-Men movie, but got all of those people to come back.
It is that thing of, like, X-Men 1, X-Men 2, and Days of Future Past are good X-Men movies. He just is a shitty person.
Sure. And I know he's been probably, like, is he canceled at this point?
I
don't think he's... Yeah, I think he's Weinstein, in director jail, right? At least.
I don't know.
Like, because he's not... He made Bohemian Rhapsody, which made $900 million.
Yeah, he got kicked off of that, I thought. Didn't he? And then it was like...
I think his name's still on it.
Director credit. Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's entirely possible. Anyway. Yes. He's not a great person, but it's fascinating that, even, like, Hugh Jackman got hurt.
Yeah.
Of all people, and was like, "I'll come back and do Days of Future Past."
Absolutely.
And it's just incredible how good that movie is.
Well, like, if you think about it, for him, how many X-Men movies does he do between this one and Days of Future Past? Because that's like
almost
8 years of X-Men movies.
Three
where
more.
You do Origins and you do The Wolverine with James Mangold, and you have like somebody, and he's gaining more and more clout as he's going too, so I really don't know how anybody
if
was
anything,
cool with him coming back.
He gets more clout and he's like, "I will not work with this director."
Right.
Like, I am your guy. You need Wolverine in this movie.
Right.
And you can't make it without me.
I really don't know how Days of Future Past happened as far as that hiring decision goes, you know, based on all the behind-the-scenes stuff of this one.
Did he get clean at any point?
I don't know about that. Okay. Really, I don't. Yeah.
That's going to be
There
my
must
guess.
Have been something like that, something to rehabilitate his image enough in their eyes for them to come back, but
it
who knows?
It had to have been. Because, although he also did Apocalypse, right?
I am not sure on the top of my head about that.
I think Singer did do Apocalypse. I pull that up here while
I thought
Jordan
that was...
talks.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Apocalypto.
Different film.
Problematic director.
Bryan Singer did X-Men Apocalypse immediately after Days of Future Past, and it is a bad movie.
I think you start seeing in the run-up to Infinity War, that is where the cracks start showing for Sony and Fox in a lot of ways. Like, so coming back to like, let's get our best X-Men director back no matter how shitty he is.
Yeah.
I kind of understand that from the cutthroat business decision.
Well, and his two movies made the most money. Like, even no movies that they made after that, and they made 4 X-Men movies in between X2 and Days of Future Past?
I think
2 Wolverine solos, First Class, and X3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So
it's almost like the personality needed to be a good director of a movie is inherently kind of toxic.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of media figures that are pretty bad people.
There is
a
fine line.
I'm sure there are also good ones, but
PTA seems like a nice guy from what I can tell. Although, you know, Phantom Thread is a bad movie and he does not make,
I feel like you just need like kind of a dangerous level of self-confidence to be like, no, yeah. I'm this guy who can tell everybody what to do.
It feels like Whiplash, like J.K. Simmons is like, I'm trying to get you to be great, but if you're going to be a little bitch and whine about it, then you're not going to be great. Like, there is a fine line, and then one of his students, like, killed themselves, and that's like, oh, you went a bit over the line there. It is a tough path to walk, because there are a lot of kind people who make absolutely terrible directors.
But there are some good people that make good movies.
There are. They're out there. Like,
Wes Anderson, by my perspective.
Oh, no, he makes bad movies.
No, he's a good person, though.
Bad movies.
Okay, so the next thing on this podcast, she'd kick your ass.
Well, we're watching her from the. She's auditing right now. She's making a lot of facial expressions at the dumb things we are saying. We did do an Isle of Dogs episode, though. And I do not like that movie at all.
Okay, keep talking about X-Men.
Yeah, let's talk about X-Men. Jordan.
So we've gotten through one scene.
We have. How far into this are we? I think we're. 30 minutes. This is par for the course for us.
You guys start.
We see Logan searching around for something, and honestly, at this point, I'm like, I forgot what he's looking for.
He's looking for his origin, his story.
Yeah, what he's looking for.
But it's weird. They just kind of wanted to piggyback off where the first movie left, and it's nice that they gave them that shot, and I guess they had to go back to Alkali Lake anyway, or wherever they filmed that, so it wasn't like... But it almost feels like it would be better to just say, I went there, I didn't find anything, and then the movie starts with him. Because the first one ends with him driving to there. And they could have just skipped this entire sequence if they didn't need to film
that. How would you
anyway.
Get to see him staring down a wolf, even though he's not wolf-themed?
Yeah, it's a weird, just like a lone character.
Yeah.
You could argue that is symbolic of him and Jean Grey's relationship. Like, she's like, you're a loner. You don't belong in a relationship.
This is like the only X-Men movie that should be Wolverine-focused at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is his background.
So I don't blame him for showing and not telling there. But
okay.
Yeah.
So Jordan is half interested in this movie at this point. He likes one of the two scenes. What did you think of the third
scene? Well, I didn't have any problem with this scene. I just forgot what he was looking for.
Yeah.
He was looking for answers.
Yeah, well, and then I figured that out when he got back and talked to Professor Xavier.
Yes. And so the white... Oh, and then there's the field trip. The Pyro and Rogue and Iceman. Pyro's the new guy, the new character who becomes a villain, who started as an X-Men.
Yeah. Anyone who's got fire powers is always going to be on the edge.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Sees who Bobby turns the fireball into like an ice thingy. You know,
they're like hanging. There, he is teased.
Yes.
What is your thought on Pyro? I think that as a child, that was a pretty cool power.
Yeah, but anytime they give someone a fire power, they're going to make them a bad guy.
Yeah,
it's like Avatar. Fire Nation had to be the bad guys.
Yeah. Inherently evil power. So this whole sequence is basically they're, what are they in the museum for? The field trip?
Yes, it's setting up the whole evolution focus thing on, like, Storm's giving the tour and talking to them about, like, hey, like, they're the idea that Neanderthals and humans lived in harmony for a little bit, or even interbred or whatever. So thematically, it's kind of setting up, like, hey, we're the next step in evolution. There's this conflict between... Yeah. You know, the previous race and us.
And then it immediately cuts to mutants and humans not getting along in a cafeteria.
Yeah, which works.
Just for petty teen squabbles.
You also get to see Jean's powers go out of control a little bit. And, like, she's starting to get way too much psychic intake.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Who she becomes at the end of this movie, you see. Did you notice it, Jordan? I don't think I picked up on it the first time. Like, the pans over the ocean where she was buried by water.
Yeah,
and you get the little Phoenix logo.
I saw that there was some kind of shape, but I didn't know what it was a shape of.
It is the Phoenix in the comics, arguably one of the most popular X-Men comics, I would
Absolutely.
Say, Dark Phoenix.
The most popular story they've ever done.
She becomes, like, the most powerful being in Marvel lore. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a Wanda Maximoff type, just... basically unlimited magic and
kills a planet
can blow up shit by just looking at it.
So without that context I was just like there's
a
shape there
baseball,
yeah
you know?
yeah
But they do set it up for the next movie, which they have made two X-Men movies at this point that are centered around Dark Phoenix storyline, and both of them have been bad. So it's very unfortunate that their most popular comic has not been able to be adapted correctly. But in this, she is also kind of nerfed because she is worried about becoming too powerful and losing control of her powers. And then we go back to the X-Mansion.
Yeah, and they're looking for Nightcrawler.
We tripped over...
You know the part where, you know, they get into a fight with the teens at the mall or whatever,
at and the then museum?
Professor X, like, freezes everybody?
Oh, yes, yes.
Do you guys know anything about that scene?
About the scene?
Not a thing. Yeah.
They actually, for all the extras in the museum, they hired professional mimes. Because really? They needed people to be able to freeze.
That's movie magic.
Right, especially that one kid, like, knocks back and forth, you know? But yeah, so many of them in the shots, professional mimes,
they don't
have body control.
They don't make movies like they used to.
They would have just done it in post.
Yeah,
or frozen them, like, digitally, as opposed to, exactly. You know what, let's go find a bunch of mimes.
That's what I thought it was. I just assumed they froze it digitally and then had a second camera, like, running around or whatever.
Mimes.
Like, wow. That sounds so made up, but I believe
I'm going to confirm.
Did I dream that, or did I find that? That's confirmed
in the context of this podcast.
Yeah,
truth has no mimes. Power here.
That's true.
The filmmakers hired scads of mimes to appear as
what
featured
extras. What is
scads? We're learning so much today. Scads.
Is scad the name of a group
I think that's just a word
mutes?
For many.
Yeah.
No, don't use it
a
like
cornucopia of mimes.
A cornucopia
a large
of mimes.
A plethora. Number or quantity of mimes.
Okay, well, that's a very fun fact. We then come back to the school where Professor X... everyone says hi to Logan. Logan's reunited. Rogue is excited to see him. Jean Grey's excited to see him. Cyclops, not so much. We get
a
little
fairness,
more. He stole his bike and also tried to steal his girl. I do love the exchange they have where he throws the keys. He's like, your bike needs gas. He's like, well, fill it up. I'm not filling it up.
Yeah.
Scene also starts the weird sexual tension between Rogue and Iceman,
yeah,
because they can't touch and all that, including Colossus's little cartoon that he draws.
Oh yes, of them, Iceman of going, Iceman Wah! Like head exploding, or being zapped.
Yeah.
So then they
remind us what Cerebro is, while they also are looking for Nightcrawler,
which is also the main. Or Logan and Professor X reunite, and. I just, again, like, all the banter's just still here. Like, why are you smoking in my house, Logan? Like, it's like they never parted ways. All my best friends got back together, and it's like they never separated.
And they got the cigar putting out on the hand. That's
really badass.
Now, they're reminding us of everything with that. Because, like, well, they're reminding us that he has healing powers. Mm-hmm. Their conversation makes it so that I finally go, oh, yeah, that's what Logan's looking for. He forgot everything. He has amnesia.
Yes.
Like me.
You're just like Wolverine.
Yeah.
And
except for without the healing and claws.
I saw, like, the cigar sequence and just, like, how he healed from it. He was so casual about it. Like, yeah, I gotta put this out, but this is the only place I can do it in this huge dome. So he just puts it out on his hand, and I was like, I have no interest in smoking cigars, but I would love to put one out on my skin to look cool.
Because Wolverine told me it was
as an impressionable 13-year-old boy. It did not get me into smoking. It got me into burning my skin. So they make a plan to go get Nightcrawler. Jean Grey and Storm go to Boston, where he's hanging out in a church. And
then everyone splits up.
Yes. With like Scooby-Doo.
Except for Logan, who, even though he's just got back, has been left in charge of all the kids.
And all of them are, like, making jokes, like, you have to stay here tonight, by the way. What was their plan? Like, if he didn't spontaneously return?
Yeah.
Or did they just always assume he'd be back by this night to babysit?
I guess.
It's like he immediately came in and they're like, you're babysitting tonight, you know? Like, it's... Yeah. That was, like, first on everyone's
Colossus
mind.
Colossus could have done it. They just need to make Wolverine feel useful and make him whatever, but...
Yeah.
Before they split up, they also established Magneto's in jail, too.
Magneto's in plastic prison. What do you think of the plastic jail cell, Jordan?
So we saw it at the end of the last movie.
Yeah.
Do
you like it more or less here? Or the same?
Yeah, pretty much the same. I mean, I think it's an interesting effect, except for last movie, I was like, when did they build that? Like, how, I guess maybe they already had a plan to take Magneto into custody and already built it.
He's like the FBI's most wanted at this point.
I think after he broke out of the cell in Days of Future Past or whatever, we can retcon it to, we need a better way to hold him than under the Pentagon.
Yeah, that's true. Spoilers for Days of Future Past. But we have imprisoned him before. And then we get Stryker. Oh, your boy, Logan Roy, is Stryker. Was that a fun surprise, Jordan?
It was. I had no idea he was going to be in this.
I also rewatched this for the... I had seen this movie like 10 times, and then I hadn't watched it for probably 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I just watched it right before Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness.
Shout out.
To, yes, one of our... a top five of this podcast, despite people's constant critiques of it.
Also, when I first saw him here, I was like, oh, that's funny. He's in like a little side role. He's the
main
lead
bad.
Yeah, I just thought he was like going to be like a little assistant to the president or whatever, and then they were going to pass it off back to Magneto.
He is brutal, but then there's also the moments where Mystique needs to play him, and he's playing it so fun and like he blows the kiss and he just smacks the guy with the gun. Like, what a fun performance he's giving.
So, like, let me ask you guys your opinion. What's the actor's name again? I'm sorry.
Brian Cox. I was just watching Daredevil earlier.
Like, I want to talk about this movie as like an adaptation of a storyline later.
Okay.
But Stryker in the comics is not like a military dude. He is a reverend, right? So he's like a televangelist guy, right?
Interesting.
And the only reason I bring it up now is that you talked about Nightcrawler being German. A whole big thing in the comic this adapts called God Loves, Man Kills is kind of has Stryker as the villain, but still is his like reverend persona, right? Okay. And Nightcrawler is like the main X-Men character across from him. So you have like Nightcrawler, devout Catholic, classic dude, versus Stryker, who's like mutants are God's damnation on the earth or whatever. So a lot of that sets it up as a conflict there. But would you have enjoyed this more if he had been a reverend? Is that something you want to see from Brian Cox?
I don't,
or do you like him as the military man?
In this specific movie, I don't think that fits. But
sure,
I think today if we get that plot line with Brian Cox as a reverend, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
100%.
That sounds... I'm actually so surprised to hear that, just because that is such a deviation of the character.
Right.
But
like,
think of,
to be
like,
a reverend would be such a major component of who he is. To take that from him and then keep the name of the character seems odd to me.
But
it seems like such a fundamental change.
This franchise is just like they're taking pieces of X-Men stuff and then they're making it an early 2000s period piece with like all their costumes too colorful. Let's just give them black jumpsuits because The Matrix was super cool looking.
Did he still have the same like plot with his son when he was a reverend?
I do think his son was a mutant in God Loves, Man Kills. There's a lot of people way more knowledgeable about X-Men than me, and I respect the hell out of them, because that's managing like 50 different characters' backstories, whereas I, as a Batman fan, only have to monitor like 6, you know? but I think he still has a son, and I think that is pointed out, like this idea of like you're biased, you're a hypocrite, I mean, you're just mad your son is different, you know, or something like that. So it's not the same. But I do think a lot of it, in the same way that X-Men 1 is like, why would you put Wolverine up against Magneto when Magneto is just going to body him every time? it's the same thing, right? You need, if Wolverine's going to be the main character and it's going to be about discovering his Weapon X past, then your villain, no matter who you want for it, is going to have to be a military guy. You know what I mean? So it's, like, I think it's keeping that because I think Stryker is the most notable X-Men villain who is a human purely and hates mutants.
Okay.
And I think they wanted to keep that for this movie, but just combined him with other, like, more military villains.
And in the comics, is he, like, the guy who gives Wolverine the adamantium? Or...
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't
think so.
I think it would have been interesting, if they did want to combine some characters, to have kept in that religious element. Because it's not like you couldn't have a religious, like a, you know, visibly religious military character who like is, you know, quoting scripture or something.
Yeah.
Like, no, like especially totally... like, I don't know, there's a lot of Bible verses that kind of have an ominous quality that he could have used to portray him as that foil to Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
Because Nightcrawler's religiosity, I just, every time it was brought up, I was just like, that's interesting.
Yeah,
like that's such a big part of his character.
Dogma quite a bit.
Yeah,
but it's almost as if they kind of cut out religious stuff from this movie. I imagine they probably just were thinking Brian Cox would be more badass if he was just like a general, a military guy. Or so Brian Singer doesn't really care as much about the source material. I don't know.
And then so going back to the plot where we are is they find Nightcrawler.
Yes.
And that's where we learn that he's like a kind of a sweet character. Catholic, and he was mind-controlled. Yeah, mind-controlled. And also has all these cool scars, which are apparently religious iconography, at least in the universe of the movie they're supposed to be. I didn't recognize any of the shapes as being either, religious symbols.
I trust that they did their homework when it came to Nightcrawler's appearance.
Also, I don't know what kind of makeup they're using, but when they turn someone blue in these movies, they turn them blue as hell.
It's probably paint. Yeah. I would imagine.
I just feel like it'd be hard to wash off. It seems so deeply.
Yeah, well, I mean, these actors are in like the makeup chair for like 6 hours,
right?
And then
he's shirtless for one scene, so
yeah,
I'm sure that's took a lot of time.
That's even.
I mean,
more
the scene we're talking
then
about.
Then he's got to get like the fucking three finger thing going.
Yeah, you know, that looks a little goofy. as far as effects go, there's also a scene just after this. Once he's in the plane, and they have like he's sitting in the chair with his legs up. And he has like the three finger feet.
Yeah.
But they're like fake legs in front of him, and somehow they've hidden his legs in the chair, I guess.
I didn't pick up on that.
I don't think they did like I don't think you could do a three toe prosthetic that looks like how his feet look.
You just put him in like a shoe that looks like his feet at that point. I'm not really sure how you do it.
I think what they did though is they made fake legs and then they put his legs in through the chair because his chair looks a little different.
Okay.
I was too mesmerized by movie magic to care.
Well, it just reminded me of like, have you ever seen like one of those Halloween costumes where it's like a person on the back of a horse and they have fake legs because their legs are the horse's legs? It kind of looked like that to me. He just had these little fake legs in front of him. Anyway.
Well, don't worry. A few years down the road, everyone is exclusively going to do CGI to make people look.
And we're going to be worse off for it because even though like I kind of. Like, this effect I saw through, most of the time, it sells it so well.
Yeah.
So it's worth it, you're saying.
Yeah, like having the mimes freeze time. Yeah. Like, you can move the camera around however you want.
I wonder how much that cost them as opposed to...
I don't think the mimes were busy.
Well, still, I mean, it's paying a whole bunch of people instead of just freezing a shot.
Mimes do not have a famously high hourly rate.
Are they not unionized?
No one could know because they wouldn't tell you.
Okay, so Boston happens. They meet Nightcrawler, and then Scott and Professor X are going to the plastic prison where Magneto is.
But that turns out to be a trap from
Stryker. They are trapped. Cyclops gets like a kind of a moment where he's like, let me save Professor. And then Lady Deathstrike is just like immediately just kicks him in the face and he's done.
He's done. He gets tranked? No. He
gets tranked first.
He hits his like jacket and it kind of doesn't work. But he does get his ass kicked, yes.
But just not even like a long fight sequence. He's just immediately kind of taken down.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not as enjoyable as watching Cyclops, you know, fight Lady Deathstrike.
Just go watch the first 10 minutes of X-Men 97 to see what you were robbed of.
Yeah, he's so cool in X-Men 97, it's crazy. And Cyclops genuinely, like, was my favorite guy for a while, even though Wolverine just seemed too easy to like. Like, everyone who watches it, Wolverine's the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like, Cyclops and Nightcrawler. Those are my guys. And both kind of done disservice. Nightcrawler is pretty great in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
But he's done disservice by the franchise.
Agree. Hard agree.
So then we get the sequence you were talking about earlier, which is the raid on the school.
The X-Mansion.
The X-Mansion. And all of the kids are, like, displaying their powers. Like, the one girl screams loud. The one kid's just staying up, turning the TV channels with his eyes.
Love that guy.
What's his power?
I think whatever it is, we don't want him to sleep. He's just like, whatever happens when you sleep.
I think it's either general telekinesis or like electromagnetic telekinesis where he controls technology. I feel like that's the implication, but clearly it doesn't come up again.
And then we also get like a tease of Shadow Cat.
Yeah, it's the second of many Kitty Prides in this series. Because she's in the first one, too. She runs through a wall.
Yes.
No, sorry. Or maybe that happens, but Jean mentions her in the... talk to the Congress or whatever.
Yeah, like, that's right.
That there's a girl who can walk through walls, and then she's in this one, recast again or whatever.
And then she's a main character in X3. Mm-hmm. But again, that movie is kind of a mess. So
yeah, Colossus.
Colossus is great.
Pretty dope. I wish there was more Colossus in the movie.
And in 3, I think he is one of the main guys in 3.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Same actor, I think.
So yes, he comes back.
Hardly any lines, if any.
It's just so weird how that team is just kind of mangled.
Well, this is like one of the things where it's hard. Well, one thing I think is difficult about the MCU in general, outside of this, you know, is when you get to big events like Civil War and even Secret Invasion stuff or Infinity War, it's like, before, with Infinity War and Endgame as an exception,
yeah,
like, you just can't make your universe big enough to match the sprawl of comic books, you know, where you have, like, hundreds there's of C-level
so
characters
much stuff
that you can have people just, like, killed off-screen and someone's gonna care about it because they read a comic 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's like, but most of the time, you really can't get a good feel of volume. Whereas this movie, I think, has, like, an excellent surplus of characters,
mm-hmm.
where they all kind of leave you wanting more, where it's like, Banshee Girl's cool, and Colossus is cool, why isn't he in the rest of the movie? And then you've got, like, 3 other teen characters, and you've got core X-Men. It's like, they have such a deep roster
of
cool
so many
powers
of them, yeah.
that I think that sequence does show it in a way that's both cool and harrowing.
Yeah.
To see these kids getting, like, hunted down and
turned. Oh, I love the sequence. I think the sequence is great. I'm just upset about X3 existing mostly.
Sure.
Wait, we gotta get Nick a power.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Last time we determined, did we come up with names for ourselves?
No, we don't have names. We went to a random power generator and we each got a random power. I got X-ray vision, and Cade got the power to generate poison.
Oh, man. Yes, okay, I'm cool. Poison Boy.
Spider-Man.
Let's see, random. I gotta find the same one.
Yeah.
I'm sure
I think we did, like, best 2 out of 3.
Well, while you're finding out, I'll say one thing I really like about the sequence in the movie in general is, like, with the Nightcrawler thing and this and with the cigar on the hand, it does a really good job showing powers, A, creatively, and B, better than in some ways comics can. Like, Nightcrawler is a bunch of, like, you can do it a lot of different ways, you can have multiple places on a page, you can have sequences, but, like, to be able to actually execute a power and elevate it from what people know in the comics or any other medium, and that includes Storm's tornado stuff later, that's a watermark for this movie.
Absolutely.
That it does something really that it transcends the original medium almost.
I will also say, and Nick, you're well versed in these movies, so you might have an answer. Is this the first time that we get, like, Wolverine goes berserk on, like, 20 military people, and that seems to be a staple in every movie after this? Was this sequence so beloved that everyone's like, we need a scene of Wolverine just killing a whole bunch of people all at once?
I think this movie is kind of excellently violent.
You
know what I mean?
It is.
Like, including the scene we kind of skipped over in the Magneto breakout. Well, that hasn't happened yet.
No,
like,
he has not broken
later. But, like, when Magneto breaks out, that's gory almost.
They rip
Wolverine,
rip his blood out of him.
I think it's that weird thing of, like, oh, we can do this now, because Wolverine has very much been in that place of, like, where, like, the Ninja Turtles are, where, like, 3 of them have deadly weapons, but they only ever fight robots. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, Wolverine's like, oh, they're giving us money to kill a lot of people and a lot of blood packets and stab people through feet and shit like that, you know? So I think that, they saw that. People love that. They kind of reveled in that.
Yeah, because,
like,
after
violence.
This, even if it doesn't make sense in the context of the movie, there's always a scene in every one of these movies where he's just killing a whole bunch of people.
Even in Rampage. I still haven't seen all of it with her. I've seen this scene, but you watched Night at the Museum 3 recently?
Right after I watched Days of Future Past, so it was a real...
Hugh Jackman is in Night at the Museum 3, if you remember.
Yeah,
as briefly. A play, and, like, he does the meme, basically, of, like, being Wolverine and gesturing angrily at someone. It's like, so that's how much it became, like, I think iconic of the character to be like, oh, I'm a hardcore, I'm Wolverine.
Yeah, kind of a big deal. He is his guy.
I've got your power.
I think what
we can do is you can re-roll it. I can't give you multiple and then you select from it, because I think that's too good. We want it to be like a weird power like the kids in the movies.
Right.
Yeah.
They didn't get to choose. There's one kid in the comics whose only power is exploding, and it's not like, oh, I explode and I come back. He just has it one time.
How does he know he has?
It's a four-issue series, and, like, Beast talks about it. It's like, this is what we think your power will do.
Oh, he thinks it is.
No, and he's right. I mean, but it's just like, so it's like, you're an X-Man whose power is exploding one time. You know? Wow. So I do not get to reroll. I will accept anything the generator gives me.
I already see what it is, so it's pretty good. You got force field projection.
Hell yeah. Okay,
that's you can do a lot of stuff with force field projection, I feel
hell
like.
Yeah.
I mean, just like Invisible Woman.
Yes.
What do you want your superhero name to be?
I don't know.
You can mull it over. We still
I'll have to give it some time.
We have a little bit more maybe to talk over.
We didn't come up with names for ours.
I think I like Poison Boy.
I don't know. I'll have to think about
X-ray specs.
I choose Bubble Boy
or Shades.
For mine.
We can't all be boys
or crazy.
Why can't we all be boys?
X-ray Boy.
X-ray Boy. Well, and then we need to eventually at the end of this series, we were gonna do like half. We're gonna divide the guests and you know do a Brotherhood of Mutants versus an X-Men situation and who would be on what side. So are you
I'm Bubble Boy now.
Are you? But when I determine sides, I imagine you want to be one of the X-Men instead of.
I guess so.
I mean, that's an inherently kind of heroic power, force field projection. Yeah. Like this is like in the scene where a city's being destroyed, you have a lot of business saving citizens.
Yeah.
I do love it when Invisible Woman cuts out like parts of her power where she reminds people how OP she is, where she's like, I could create a solid block of invisible force field and drop it on you and you die.
Or just like make a force field inside you.
Yeah,
and make
or
it
like
blow
I
up.
Can give you a little bubble inside your brain and you die or something like that. So
yeah.
She's
force field around your heart.
Could be evil. We'll see.
When are we getting our R-rated, like Logan-esque Invisible Woman movie where she's just murdering people
where
across
the
West? We
saw Mr. Fantastic like get unraveled in your favorite movie.
Oh man, what a fucking scene that was.
Cade, you're actually kind of a villain. Poison generation.
Poison,
that's a bad
poison
guy
boy,
power.
Poison boy's evil.
I mean, you
definitely
could just like
Magneto.
Hand someone a drink and then just doop.
Ooh.
Yeah. Just like, oops, I poisoned it.
Yeah.
That's
you don't say that.
No, that's my catchphrase. That's what I say before I kill everyone.
Did I do that? Yes, I did. I poisoned it.
I'll be the Magneto to your professor. Although X-ray is a very mischievous power. What kind of good are you using that for? You're breaking into bank vaults and looking at the...
That's not going to be helpful.
Yeah, looking at
I'm very much just
clothing.
Like a... I feel like it's a very support power. Like, I have no... I don't know. Unless you pair it with, like, a sniper rifle or something, then I can actually do some damage.
I'm X-ray boy plus sniper rifle.
I can see through a wall. Bop.
I can see through the wall, but the bullet can't travel through the wall.
Well, it depends on what kind of rifle it is.
We need a laser.
If it's a big
rifle.
Fancy sci-fi rifle.
All right, so depending on who is on your team, they might like influence your powers and what kind of hero or villain you are.
Otherwise, I'm just like calling shots or something. Like, hey, the bad guys are over there.
Yeah,
I can see them through the wall. I'll hang back because otherwise, I'm just a human.
All right, great.
So
welcome.
Woman saves the kids.
Welcome to the team, Bubble Boy. yes, Wolverine saves the kids in a really badass sequence. He wants to stay behind and talk to Stryker. Pyro, Iceman, and Rogue all escape. Rogue's like, we got to go back for him. And Iceman builds an ice wall to break up, to separate Wolverine from the men. Who he probably, like, how would that scene play out? I still think Wolverine kills pretty much everyone. And movie over, maybe.
No, he wouldn't have, like, I think Stryker would have talked him into not killing him.
Yeah,
everybody
sure.
else is dead, though,
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah, because Wolverine still does want answers. Then we get a road trip movie featuring NSYNC.
Yeah.
NSYNC Needle Drop reminding you what time period this is.
Yeah, very much.
Wolverine finds a phone in the car that communicate with the other X-Men. And Stryker's plan, yes, they'd have to drive farther. Stryker's plan has been revealed to be...
something to do with Cerebro.
Yes, he's
you
using...
don't quite know yet.
They have broken into the school for the sole purpose of using Cerebro.
Right.
Or getting access to the technology.
Using a cool eyeball machine or whatever.
Which he sets it under the guise, like when he's talking to the president in the military, he's like, there's this school here operating like...
Yeah.
You know, illegally, what we got to do some research, but they only wanted Cerebro the whole time.
Right. Nefarious.
Yes, very evil plot. And then Stryker's son is revealed. Professor X tried to help him, and Stryker's very upset that he did not cure his mutant deformity in his eyes.
Sure. I mean, it's like a child having its ability to create illusions.
Yeah.
And I think he probably was he was probably just a kid, first and foremost, right? Maybe not a well-balanced kid or whatever. Yeah. Especially if you're coming from kind of such a phobic home,
A
Stryker would give for you, you know.
Yeah, he would not be a great role model.
But apparently it led to Stryker's wife, Jason's mother, killing herself to rid herself of, like, the illusions her son was putting in, which is like, yeah, I guess that would be very difficult to deal with if your kid was constantly gaslighting you.
I don't know if mutilating your son is the answer.
No, she didn't mutilate
him. No, but
Stryker absolutely takes it as, like, this whole thing's a spawn on the Earth or whatever, and then makes it his mission to specifically
take out mutants. Pretty good villain motivation. Like, mm-hmm. This is a very compelling villain backstory, right. And I think they reveal it in a good way.
I mean, like, immediately he doesn't introduce Jason as his son. He's you know, this is mutant X, Y, whatever, you know.
Because he's no longer, his son died or whatever, he mentions
that. My son is dead.
Yes.
Yeah,
this is my experiment.
Yeah.
Pretty good villain.
Okay, so now we're on to the Magneto escape, right?
Yes. I think
that's what happens
where
next.
Mystique disguises herself as
Rebecca Romijn
to seduce the security guard. Gets him drunk, roofies him, and injects his blood with a ton of iron, so Magneto can rip the iron out of his blood and basically just use it to escape in a very badass sequence.
Fun fact alert.
There we go.
Trivia corner. When she's looking up Stryker's plans on the computer earlier, when she's still disguised as Senator Kelly.
Yeah.
You know, before the scene, she passes by the garbage
man. Oh, yes, and he disguises himself.
They actually did cast twins as the garbage men. So when she's disguised as the garbage man, it's not one person CGI'd or double screened or parent trapped.
It is a pair of mimes twins. And twins. They don't do that anymore. The big two.
Yes, but that doesn't relate to this scene, but I didn't have time to talk about it earlier.
I don't think we even mentioned that other sequence, but.
Yeah.
So this is the one where you said it's like horror movie gore in that he pulls the iron out of the guy's blood.
Yeah.
And
which shocked that they because you kind of see, like, his shirt is bloody. Yeah. Like, I'm surprised
the
they
mist,
got away with
missing
it.
Missing out.
Like, all this stuff today feels like that would happen off camera.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sequence is great. I think Magneto is just, like, you already know that he's, like, super powerful, but then you're like, oh, I guess you're kind of nerfed if you don't have any metal around, and shows how powerful he is when he has even a tiny bit of metal around.
Like, the whole treatment of Magneto up to that point is such great villain establishment for Stryker, because Magneto being hardcore and awesome, but kind of Charles walking in and seeing his eyes all glazed over, and like that he's been drugged and all that. So it's like, it's a cool, like, Magneto finally gets back to Magneto levels when he breaks out and starts shooting the ping pong balls everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, all he needs is, I don't know, like a couple of grams of iron.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he gets all his power back. Pretty dope.
Yep.
Then we go to Bobby Iceman's house, where he hangs out with his family.
His really funny mom, who's...
who's like, have you tried not being a mutant?
Yeah, she's so disgusted by her son being a mutant.
Also, like, he freezes, like, her cup of water or tea or whatever and turns into an ice block. That seems pretty cool for a kid. Like, I get maybe you're worried about your child going through discrimination or whatever, but, like, it's not like he's creating illusions that...
Yeah, he doesn't have a very evil power. Iceman, that's a pretty safe power. I mean, you can definitely kill people with it, but it's not scary Fireman.
Like, not quite like actual trivia, but like things people already knew. But Ian McKellen is gay and Bryan Singer's bi, so they did rewrite some of those parts to specifically make it more of a coming out for him in that scene.
And it is like X-Men has always been about civil rights and discriminated minorities, like, kind of thing. And so mutants have definitely been like iconography or an icon for, you know, homosexuality.
You're casting a lot.
And
you can cast a lot of different layers on it as far as race or sexuality.
For sure.
In this scene, where he comes out to them And
his brother immediately runs upstairs and calls the police.
Yeah, which bad reaction.
Well, they mention it's like, oh, like the evil mutants on the news, yeah, or whatever, sure. Which is like, I wish we had seen more of that, you know, like this kind of, and I think that's where the earlier striker,
that was the first movie, right? I think.
Well, yes, for sure.
That you're just like, they killed the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
They murdered her.
they struck her with lightning. The Ghostbusters did. They walked her through the city.
Yeah. So it is strange that the little brother, and they do have that moment where, like, they're leaving at the end of this sequence, and he just, like, makes eye contact with his brother, like, this relationship is over. Which, we didn't really know this brother. He seems like an unpleasant person to be around.
Yeah, I'm glad he doesn't have powers.
Yeah,
He's probably just watching Harold and Maude, minding his business.
What a loser!
I do love the scene where Wolverine, like, pushes the bullet out of his head.
Oh, yeah, okay, so the cop sequence is really great here, too. Because Pyro is, like, the whole time is so ready to be, like, a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, no, we gotta be heroes, like, we have to set good example so, you know, people will like us.
Yes.
And Pyro's like, nah, fuck that, I'm gonna do my own thing. And then he burns down all of these police cars. Logan is immediately shot and taken out of the situation, which is smart, because it leaves, like, now everything's chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
It is weird that a cop shot him in the head immediately. Did he?
Yeah, he thought he had knives.
Oh, okay, because he didn't. Why were his blades out?
I think he smelled danger, and he just brought them out. Anyway.
Well, and also he's like, and they're like, drop them. He's like, I can't drop them. It's like, you can retract them. Like, we've seen you do that a bunch.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I mean, he shouldn't have to. Is like, I'm the good guy, I saved your asses.
But like,
still,
if the point of what he's saying to the police is, well, I can't get rid of them, that's not really true.
But he can't drop them.
Yeah.
So this scene actually was supposed to end with Storm showing up and putting all the fires out with rain, but apparently they ran out of time or budget or whatever, so they just had Rogue do it. With reverse fire powers.
Kaylee is miming from the corner of the room. It's weird that a cop shot someone? I would say for the plot point of this movie, this was 2003. All cops were good guys back then.
One that I don't want to go astray is the calling him Bobby Iceman.
Bobby Iceman.
Like, I'm Bobby Iceman.
That's his name. That is his name.
I've been silent for so long, I couldn't let that one go.
That will be who he has referred to for the rest of this this rest of this series.
I thought they could have used his ice powers to get rid of the flames. That seems like the natural thing to do there, but no, they have Rogue.
That sounds like it costs more money, and it's all they did was they used Rogue to retract the fire, and then they probably just rewound, like, setting those things on fire on tape, which sounds way cheaper. They spent their whole budget on mimes. They don't have enough CGI left.
One of the things I read about it was that, like, apparently there's this famous reviewer who just got his review so wrong, like, it was clear that he didn't watch it or whatever very closely.
Yeah.
And he was like, he called Rogue, quote, the mistress of rewind or something like that, where he thought her powers were just rewinding time.
Which it kind of in that situation looks like.
And
it,
they,
but
like,
that is...
cited it as like, oh, like, in the last movie she healed
things,
so maybe she rewound time, which is like,
you
got the spirit, bud.
Because with Professor X's thing, where I guess, like, people do think he can stop time, which isn't really what's happening.
Yeah.
But that is inherently
that's
what
it looks
like. It looks
for sure.
So clearly like that. Then the plane sequence, which we kind of talked about, really great. They get shot with the missile, or tornadoes. If I am a fighter jet and tornadoes, several tornadoes show up, I'm like, I'm going home for the day. Like,
not a fighter pilot.
They got away.
Jet.
If I'm
like
the vehicle.
Starscream.
If I'm the Autobot, Starscream. I love how you know its name.
I'm going to become a by this time next year, I'm going to know everything about the Transformers. You watch.
I'll
be back.
Certainly would not chase the X-Men in a plane. Like, that's a losing battle. It's over. But they do, and then they shoot out of they eject out of the jet into the tornado.
Yeah, that one guy does.
Yeah, which doesn't seem like it's going to end well for him.
Yeah.
Not great.
That one pilot stays on him, though. You know, she's like, I'm going to kill these people.
Yeah.
Let's go.
So gung-ho about murdering them.
Mm-hmm.
And they do succeed in bringing them down.
They do. And that sequence where Rogue flies out of the back because she can't buckle her seatbelt, and Nightcrawler saves her, which was pretty badass. Mm-hmm.
It was pretty cool.
And then Magneto catches the plane. Oh. He's conveniently hanging out in this field where they land.
Yeah, before that's that, lucky.
Jean uses like her like she growing power yes, to stop one, which is pretty cool.
And then she gets, I think she, it looks like in the when they cut back to her that she is worried she is too powerful.
Well, like she has gets the Phoenix eyes almost. You know, like, yeah. She's like she accesses this crazy amount of power and then can't do the second one.
Yeah. Which is a cool sequence. And then they're all camping. It's a fun little mutant camp out.
Fun, sexy camping.
Fun, sexy camping. Where Nightcrawler... This is the first time I kind of noticed this, but in... I know he's a teleporter, but every... He just randomly has three sequences with different people where he's just casually sitting next to them and starts talking to them about something they're not talking about. Which is pretty fun.
I was in the circus!
Which I enjoy quite a bit, because he's also hanging upside down, spying on them, when they're talking about their plan. And, the love sequence between Wolverine and Jean Grey.
Mm-hmm.
They share a passionate kiss briefly, before Jean Grey says, this will never work. I love my boyfriend who has shiny eyes. And then Mystique disguises herself as Jean Grey to try and seduce Wolverine, and then turns into Brian Cox in his tent, and which is kind of strange, but that is a fun Mystique thing.
So I don't know if X-Men Evolution... Do you guys ever watch X-Men Evolution, the cartoon?
No.
I think it was coming around the same time, maybe just after, because it's how it happens with all these things, yeah, right? That after one of the movies, you get a new like iteration series of it that goes for 50 episodes, and then you wait 2 more years for another new one, right?
Sure, sure.
Around that time, that series made a big deal of Mystique being a like biological mother and adoptive mother of two characters. You want to guess who those characters are?
I think I have read this. One of them is Nightcrawler.
Yes. Yeah. Mystique is supposed to be Nightcrawler's mom in the comics.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she's supposed to be Rogue's adoptive mom in the comics. But for me, as like a 11-year-old who can't differentiate between like the nuance of like comics are weird, and they say a lot of shit sometimes, and this TV show is not going to deal with that, right? Is me just like seeing Nightcrawler and Mystique standing next to her, and I'm like turning to my mom, being like, "That's his mom." Yeah. She's like, "What are you talking about?"
That is because Magneto is also supposed to be Quicksilver's and Wanda Maximoff's father,
and Lorna.
In the comics thing, but not in the MCU.
Yeah, and I'm thankful that that's where my brain was at a kid. It was like not sexy tent time with Wolverine, but instead, like that's weird that they're not addressing that. Characters are related.
I was pretty attracted to Jean Grey as a 13-year-old boy who just had to watch Harold and Maude.
She's not 80. I'll say that for
you. Yeah, good sequence. Like all of the camping stuff. Then they go to Alkali Lake, where the main climax of the movie takes place. We have
a team up with Magneto and the rest of the X-Men to break out Professor X, who is currently being mind controlled by the son of Stryker.
The illusionist, yes. And Mystique goes in disguised as Wolverine to deceive the army. Stryker immediately knows it's a scam, and she kicks all of the military people's asses and gets into the room and lets in the other X-Men.
Not before sliding under a door while also
giving the middle finger. I don't know if I had noticed the middle finger before.
It's pretty dope.
It is not something I remembered, but yeah, very fun sequence.
And she doesn't have any powers other than shapeshifting, right? So
correct. She's kind of stronger than, just because I think she can get, like, muscle mass or whatever. I imagine if you transform into, like, The Rock, you get his strength.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I would think.
Like, when she becomes Wolverine in the previous movie, right, because she fights Wolverine as Wolverine, she does get to have claws. Like, she makes claws for herself.
That's true.
I mean, obviously they get cut through by Wolverine's actual claws.
Because they're not real adamantium.
Right, but it's like, I think they would function, like, she could probably stab you with those, you know what
probably,
I mean?
Probably, yeah.
Like, so...
it's also weird, though, if they get like cut this... off, and they fall to the floor, and then she transforms back into herself, are they still on the floor? Do they disappear? Were they part of her?
Well, what happens when you spit? Saliva falls out of you, and that's like, you know...
so it's like they're a pool of blood or something?
Well, sure.
I guess so, yeah. Let's say
yeah, it's just like DNA. Just like ooze.
Just some of her bile.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. It's like vomit. Why not?
It's not like Changeling. In that, like in the X-Men 97 cartoons, there is a character who's very much like Mystique, but he also gets to copy powers at the same time, which, yeah, is,
which is way cooler.
Pretty OP, honestly.
Kind of. Good thing he's a good guy.
Yeah.
So then Mystique is in the computer room.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and Stryker is upset that his plan is falling apart, and he is trying to get all of the X-Men killed. Oh, it's also revealed that he has kidnapped the children from the school, the ones he got away with, to test if his master plan, getting Professor X to focus using Cerebro on all of mutant kind and kill them, he wants to test it on children, which is pretty evil.
Yeah.
Pretty good evil villain
here. I'm starting not to like this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was on board before he started murdering children. What other we have a Lady Deathstrike shows up. They all kind of separate here, because Wolverine wants to go deal with Stryker. Magneto, Mystique, and Jean Grey go to handle Professor X. Storm and Nightcrawler deal with the children. And then Jean Grey gets separated from Magneto and Mystique when Scott shows up. More powerful than ever, but he's still pretty easily defeated by Jean Grey.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's, of course, mind-controlled.
Yeah, so, like, okay, my boys, two cool scenes is, one, he gets his ass kicked immediately, and two, he's evil.
Yeah.
And also gets his ass kicked immediately.
This is where the dam starts to break, which is funny, because this is, like, the dam is so slowly breaking over the last 45 minutes of this movie.
Yes. Well, I mean, hey, have you ever broken concrete? It's hard to do.
No, but I also don't have laser eyes.
Yeah, that would help.
I feel like I could do it with the laser eyes.
Not the x-ray eyes.
Yeah, the x-ray eyes aren't going to do it.
No, I can just see through it. I was like, oh, there's water back there. On the other side of this dam.
Thank you, Captain Hindsight. Captain Foresight.
Well, that could be my name, Storm Captain Foresight.
Storm and Nightcrawler go and save the kids. Like, I never noticed it, like, when I was saw it in the theater or whatever. But I just sent this to you on Facebook, Kate, if you want to look at it as well. That they do the thing where Nightcrawler has to teleport into the cell below it or whatever.
Oh, yes.
Right? And he just, like, he appears in there and all the kids react and they go, ah! You know, and, like, something's just popped in. But, like, if you look at the establishing scene beforehand, before he teleports down there, you can see Alan Cumming just standing back there, and they've never fixed it in any of the like color corrections I've ever seen. It's just like he's kind of just back there in the shadows.
Never noticed that.
And it's like I only noticed it because like you're watching it on like a shitty TV you've had for 10 years at your mom's house, and it's like, oh yeah, the light correction's not working back there. I can see that guy. You know,
so weird. So, what? Oh, Lady Deathstrike and Wolverine end up fighting. Is this the first mirror matchup in a comic book movie? Because the MCU, as we have discussed several times, like seems to only do mirror matchups for everyone's origin movie. With Black Panther versus Killmonger, Iron Man versus Obadiah, Hulk versus Abomination.
Spider-Man 3 is after this or before this? With Venom.
Spider-Man 3 is after this.
Okay.
I don't know if Venom and Spider-Man are a mirror matchup. Venom has unique-ish.
They look the same.
But I'm talking about, like, power-wise. Like, Venom also, like, I don't know, eats people?
You've not like, met Spider-Man.
He has tendrils. They're similar. I don't know. I think, as best case or worst case scenario, that is Obadiah, like, just in a bigger Iron Man suit.
Okay.
Which I would still consider kind of a mirror mashup. Whereas Spider-Man 1, he's fighting the Green Goblin.
That's different. Absolutely.
Very different characters.
Right. And the Fantastic Four movies don't do that. Blade fights other vampires, but I don't think they're the same. You know, isn't to the level you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think it might be, for sure.
This the first one that the MCU just copied? Because it is just a female Wolverine, just with injected with adamantium.
Kind of.
Right.
Likes cracking her knuckles quite a bit.
Yeah, so what do you think happens after... So the result of this fight scene is that she gets stabbed with the adamantium, which then pumps into her body. And then she kind of looks like she dies, but she also has super healing, right?
I don't know if she... I mean, she must have some kind of healing, but I
remember
think...
Remember, because he scratches her.
Yeah, on her face.
Yeah. He goes, oh shit, you know,
Because he did also... Stryker said, I thought you were one of a kind, but I found more like you or whatever. But he fills up so much adamantium in it that is like... pouring out of her orifices.
I know, but isn't it even more horrifying if she, like, otherwise is healed, yeah. but has metal just
also,
frozen
she
fall,
doesn't she, like, sink into the water and you hear the clunk, like, yeah. once she hits the ground? She sounds, like, pretty full of metal.
But, for again, sure, if you have super healing, you might not be
dead.
But
I think Jordan might be right. Yeah. Like, she could still be down there.
She doesn't come back, though.
No.
Yeah, so...
Well, she can't move. She's exactly. full of metal that is indestructible. Yeah. She's just...
So you're just wondering, is she, like, buried alive?
Yeah. Is she just at the bottom of this water, alive, suffering, but unable to move because she's full of indestructible metal?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Hopefully not. Hopefully she's just dead.
Maybe they'll just yoink her out for...
She is a villain. Yeah, they might bring her back. That could totally happen. Which is good, why we're watching these movies, so Jordan will be up to speed with all of the Easter eggs. Any other last points? They save everyone. Jean basically uses her power to stop the water mm-hmm. and sacrifices herself so everyone can get away, becoming the Phoenix in the process. Stryker, Wolverine, chains him to a helicopter.
Mm-hmm. After stabbing him in the nuts.
Which, you know.
I think that's important to say.
Is it his nuts, or I always thought it was, like, just upper thigh?
I've always assumed it was his groinal area.
I mean, this guy is so evil, that's the kind of kill you want for him. To, like, be really in pain and then just drown.
Right. And this is after the whole part of, like, well, first it was killing all the mutants in the world, and then it was killing all the humans in the world.
Yeah.
Cerebro was.
Yes.
And then that all stopped.
Because he gets away out of Wolverine's chains, and then Magneto's like, no, stay right there. Pretty good end sequence. And then they go to the president, who
is announcing... Wait, before we get move on from this, I thought the Jean Grey saying bye through Professor X.
Oh, yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's also just like... there's something kind of inherently silly about it. I don't know. Just like him talking to Professor X, like, no, like, you can come back and whatever. But then, then you also, before you get to that sequence with the president, there's also that bit where Professor X, Cyclops, and Wolverine are in his office. And they're like, why couldn't she have stayed on the plane? And then they're just like, she made her decision. And I'm like, yeah, why did she? Wait. Like, I remember thinking that when she's getting off the plane. I'm like, can't she just lift it from inside the plane? Mm-hmm. But then
I don't know.
They lampshade like the fact that she could have maybe done that. And then they're just like, well, she made a decision. So it's like, did she commit suicide? Yeah. Like, did
she? Yeah, it's. And I think since the whole premise of this movie is her powers are like just working on and off. So maybe she saw, like, based on everything that happened, she saw the Phoenix coming. It's like, if I am dead, I don't have to murder everyone I love and become this huge, like, unstoppable force.
I mean, it is a cool showcase of how powerful she is. And then the last thing about that is just that then Wolverine's like, she chose you. So Cyclops doesn't get to do much in this movie, but he at least has that.
James Morrison has like the best crying scenes in this movie, you know what I mean, where he's like on the face, like no and he really does as much as he can with the shit that he's been given.
I think I enjoy his acting very much and his performances and stuff. He's also kind of, because Singer does Superman Returns after this,
yes,
and he
James Morrison leaves X-Men James... 3 to go do Superman Returns.
Oh my god,
that's why he gets killed.
Yeah. Well, somewhere. Sorry. Yeah, at some point in the movie.
Believe me.
But in Superman Returns, he's kind of the same thing where, like, Superman hooked up with Lois Lane, and now she's dating, like, a cuck who is, like, just not as good as Superman.
Sure.
And living in that shadow.
And raising his
And raising Superman's potentially kid. Superman's son.
This episode has more... usages of the word cuck than any since probably
references to Superman.
2018.
Oh, I don't know.
There was a time cuck was really in the zeitgeist.
It like, was.
With the gene choice thing, I do still think, and I think why I give this 3.5 as opposed to something higher out of
like
five.
Like five?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's supposed to have 5. You know, you can give it a 5, whatever.
I'll give it a 4.5. It's not quite perfect. Well, Days of Future Past is just so perfect that I look at this and it's,
you know,
not S.
Looking at, like, stuff that is more traditionally X-Men, or even stuff that's, like, more holistically X-Men, like X-Men 97, where it's like, we're looking at a whole picture here.
Yeah.
And it's not just the Wolverine show. You know, I feel like this movie does suffer for needing to have Wolverine at the center. Because the central conflict of the movie for Wolverine is, am I going to be part of the X-Men, or am I not going to be that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he comes back, and Charles is like, will you watch the kids? And he's like, no, I'm just passing through. Mm-hmm. You know, and Cyclops is like, then pass through, Logan. You know, like, leave if you're going to go. You know, and choosing to rescue the kids instead of pursuing Stryker and his past. And the ultimate moment where he, like, picks up the fork-tongue kid at the end.
Yeah.
And Stryker's like, who are you going to choose? Are you going to choose, like, you know, the truth or that thing in your arms or whatever? And he chooses the X-Men at every point here.
Yeah.
So it's like, there had to have been a better reason for Jean to kill herself, essentially, or go outside to do it. But giving it the kind of lazy stamp of, it was a choice, everybody needs to pick a side, you know, it's like, that's all for the Wolverine themes. It's not actually good.
Yeah, I never thought about my suicide argument, but I do think, after seeing, this is the first time I noticed how many times, like, Phoenix eyes she gets.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's frightened of what's to come.
Right.
And sacrifices herself as a result.
I do think you'll get a good Phoenix movie whenever MCU gets to X-Men.
Because, yeah, for 10 years. Like, we don't get it before 2034.
Well, it's like, the Phoenix is inherently cosmic.
Yeah.
These movies do not treat it as it. They treat it like Jean is just awesome.
Yeah.
And Dark Phoenix involves aliens, so it's kind of closer. And it actually has the real origin of the Phoenix, where Jean is, like, in space.
Yeah.
And the Phoenix Force comes to her.
Sure.
Right? So, like, I trust MCU with cosmic stuff.
Why were they in space in that? I've deleted every part of that movie.
Yeah, they were, like, proving that the X-Men could be dope because they were saving, like, a space shuttle or something like that, I think.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, that movie is so terrible.
You guys gonna do the Dark Phoenix run-up for Deadpool 4 whenever
that comes out? We'll just... Well, so, yeah. So, X-Men Last Stand is basically a Dark Phoenix movie.
Yep.
On top of... There's... like Mutant Civil War or whatever. There's
they
some
do the
comic.
Cure.
Yeah,
story
the
line.
Cure. Okay. You is know. It just called the Cure?
I don't. I'm not sure what that exact storyline would be called.
Yeah, really good movie. Jordan, what do you think?
I think I'm also on the 3.5 out of 5 train, which I think is what I gave the last one.
Yes. So do you like this more or less or the same?
Probably the same. I think I like all the same things I liked about the last one, in that there's like these. A lot of practical effects. I like the I don't know, like, again, these, for that reason, a lot of these movies feel more tactile than a lot of the MCU stuff does recently.
Sure.
And we still have like a wide cast, but sometimes having that wide cast means that you are just like skipping over some things, like the fact that that Iceman, Rogue, and Pyro are on the cover of this, like in the center, kind of. Yet they don't feel super central. I mean, they're there at a lot of pivotal moments, but they're kind of watching the grown-ups do stuff for the most
background
part.
Characters.
So,
I mean,
but I mean, you kind of have to do that with a movie like this, with it's going to have an ensemble. Some people have to be in the background while others are in the foreground, but I don't know. I think it's solid, but not exceptional, which is 3.5.
It's exceptional. I really, really enjoy this movie. I guess next time we will be discussing Frasier Beast in his debut performance.
Finally.
Kelsey Grammer.
Another blue character.
Jordan has been waiting for. That's what we've been waiting for. And they use, like, it's actual makeup on, like, they just make Kelsey Grammer blue. Yeah.
They spent a lot of money on blue makeup in this franchise.
With every penny.
It is worth quite a bit. But so, Jordan, I'm going to predict you will think it is a bad movie, but if nothing else, you are going to fully enjoy Frasier Beast being a main character.
All right. Will that do us?
I believe so. Nick, thank you for coming back on, especially in a short notice.
Anytime.
And thanks, Bubble Boy.
Back, Jordan. Jordan will have seen Godzilla Minus One.
Hell yeah.
He's making the promise.
Yeah.
And I'll know more about Transformers, apparently. I've made it my mission.
Starscream.
All right.
That's all I got so far.
I've been Jordan Peoples, and Marvel has sucked.
I have been Cade Weiberg, and no, it doesn't.